With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yes. How you feeling?
Yeah, good, man. Good. That's a lie, but good. You?
They don't care how you actually feel.
No, I know. Lockdown's shit, man. I've fucking had enough of it, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, the break free is complicated. I haven't even looked at it properly. There's loads of writing.
I know. Don't worry.
If they made a video, then...
wait for the bullet point version. I'll type one out. Yeah. It's good news anyway. Just to, do you know what I mean? Just got to hold it down. Hold it down.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just a way sort of to accept bad shit. It's just go, it's got to hold
just
it down.
Just right? Exactly.
Got sacked from my job. Got bailiffs knocking at the door.
Just got to plug
girls left. Yeah, you just got to hold it down, really. Carry on as normal. Norton, everything's changed. Yeah, I know.
This isn't normal.
Yeah, I know. But just crack on, mate.
You just got to crack yourself off.
We should do the intro, man. Let's do the intro.
Yeah, that's a good time for it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Today's guest is someone very special. All right? Someone who hails from the friendliest nation in the world. That's right, you guessed it, Canada, or Canada for the untrained traveller's ear. Yeah?
Yeah.
Travelling on foot via plane across land, sea and sky, this person has now become an adopted UK household name, appearing in such shows as 8 Out of 10 Cat, QI, Mock the Week. Yeah? Classics. Would I lie to you? Yeah?
No, you wouldn't.
No. Live at the Apollo. Yeah? And that's just naming a small portion. So.
And that's just Hammersmith.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But... her talents don't end there, mate. Yeah. Mm-mm. Not only is she a pro-level comedian, but she's also an actor, a writer. And yes, you guessed
it. You're joking.
Because the name is quite literally in the title of this podcast. It's the violently talented Catherine Ryan.
Come on.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. Yes. How are you guys?
Yeah, good. We were just talking about
Hugo's. Not as comfortable as you.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Listen, I just saw Rupert's email that's like, we're going to record video. Is that okay? And I was like, ugh, it's totally fine, but I'm just going to be in the bed.
Yeah. Well, so you guys know out there, if you're only listening, Catherine hasn't got a smidgen of makeup on and looks immaculate.
Always. Yeah. No, I do have, someone paid me, so I had makeup on today. I will put it on for money.
Amazing.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. Take my clothes off for money. So I would do that too.
People pay me to keep them on. Do you know what I was thinking? You know how people do brand partnerships and stuff? Who are you wearing? Nothing. Prada. I feel like a good pitch for me now, age 37 and kind of a boomer, is like I will take money from brands to avoid wearing their shit.
That's pretty good.
You know, like I'm going to start threatening brands and be like, what's up, boohoo.com? I'm going to wear that mini skirt and tag it in a photo unless... you give me $10.
Yeah. You give me the bag.
Yeah. So what's been going on for you since, I mean, it's been over a year now, right? Lockdown. How has it all been going for you?
I can't complain because I'm in a happy relationship, a safe relationship. I'm not a frontline worker. I haven't completely lost my job, though I've lost several of my jobs. You know what I mean? But yeah, what can we say?
Yeah.
It's been all right. I worry that people have been radicalized, which I kind of think was the idea all along. And that if anyone was introverted before, now that they've released this four-step plan or whatever, I think people are afraid to go out June 21st. They're like, oh, wait a minute. What? And I think it will be weird for people to be in large groups again.
Do you, when you watch like TV shows that were obviously whatever filmed 10 years ago, whatever, do you, when I see like a large group thing or someone, I don't know, talking and spit flying the other person, I'm like, oh shit.
yeah. Like, I have progressively been more and more like, oh, that's,
that were they hugging?
Packed.
Yeah.
Swimming. How are they?
Yeah.
That's a bit, that's too
it's
far.
Kind of disgusting that we used to just let people out with fevers.
Yeah.
I agree.
Now that we check for fevers, I'm kind of like, wait a minute, we were just letting people have fevers.
Yeah, I'm fuming if someone gets on the same tube as me with a cough. Generally, I'm.
Or like sneezing. Well, do you know what? But like, it's more acceptable to worry about that now. Like, where, you know, like me and Hugo had a studio session, and obviously we're in bubble because we work together. We had a studio session the other day, and like, kindly he said, oh, it's not COVID, I've been tested, I've got a bit of a cold, so I'd rather not come in. And I was like, oh, thank God. Like, usually it'd be like, it's just a cold, it's fine, and I'd have to put up with it and have a cold for the next 5 days afterwards.
You were the office hero if you went in with a cold or a flu or even, you know, you could be, you could have leprosy. They'd be like, well, thank God Jack is here because we really got to finish these papers.
And it would be like, I didn't take one day off this year.
I have leprosy. I'm showing a bit of bone, but I've worked really hard.
Yeah. Do you know, in high school, we were from a very small-minded, very white town. Yeah. And you know what? Most white kids are like, we're lazy. And there were two Asian young men who went to our school, boys, let's call them boys, because we were all really small. And they were, you know, from immigrant families. They worked harder. They studied harder. You know, they were great examples of like A students. And there was a science test and the one boy was late. And we thought, oh my gosh, because he always had the most perfect attendance, never missed a day, was never tardy, nothing. And it was a test day and he wasn't there. And even the teacher was like, you know, weirded out by it. And then just as the bell went, the door flung open and this boy was at the back of the room and he dragged himself to the front of the room, genuinely with his clothes torn and bleeding. And he said, I'm so sorry. I was in a car accident. And wow. I made the fireman write me a note and he gave the teacher this note.
Oh, God.
And the teacher was like, what the fuck? Like, okay, is the rest of your family okay? And he goes, oh, my family, we're not there. I was just walking and a car hit me. Like, oh, he got hit by a car just walking. And like, these are the people who, God bless him. I'm sure he's doing all successful things. Actually, I know what he's up to now. He's in, like, an important doctor.
Yeah.
But nevertheless. Go. Had he been sick? These are the people that need to be stopped.
Yeah. It's so true. Yeah. Me and Hugo are the polar opposite of that. Like the amount of, we used to work in a call center together and the amount of excuses we gave.
Yeah.
One time Hugo, he still says this is true to this day.
No, it is true. It's true.
I was sitting there in the office and they went, Hugo's not coming in today because he's locked in his own house.
It's true though. I was this sounds really sad, but I was living at my friend's mum's house for a little bit.
He used to go out with her.
Yeah, she was good girl, she was. Taught me about myself. No, and she went out to work and chubbed the door and there you go. I was stuck in until
didn't know where all the key windows were and all that.
You leave a window open.
Yeah,
you know?
But we don't have sinister houses like that in Canada. We do not lock them from the outside.
Because it's so friendly.
Yeah.
It's just like a Friends episode. You can always open the door.
Well, yeah, we don't lock them from either side, I guess. But
that's bad. Because the thing is, you can't open, well, you know, in England anyway, most stores, if you close them, you don't really need to lock them because you can't open them from the outside anyway.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you locking it as well?
Just we don't have that. We don't have it. Not from the inside, not from the outside.
What about nighttime, though?
We can lock them.
Yeah.
And we do, you know, I always lock the door at night, but they'll never trap you in or out. That's not a thing.
What about, is that just the specific part of Canada you came from? Because like, what about in the city?
I think everything's just newer. And so I think it's an old fashioned type of door that locks itself.
Oh, got you. Yeah.
Because everything's new in Canada. It was so weird for me when I moved to the UK. And not only were things old, but they were valued for being old. Like if we had a castle in Canada, we'd knock it down.
Yeah. Put a shopping mall there.
And I lived in a Gothic church conversion, like a listed great. Oh no, it just means you can't have sky. But I thought it was cool. I was like, oh my gosh, it's listed. It's so, and it was awful. It was old and I needed to do a lot to it to get it to a standard that I could live in. And it was always, it couldn't heat it, couldn't have satellite, all these different things. In Canada, we would never stand for that. It would never be a selling feature. Like, look at these stained glass windows. It would be like, sorry about this old church. We're going to burn it down.
You can get sky here though. Okay. Cool. That's fine.
That sounds quite haunted vibes though, where you lived.
I'd
be like, I always have that, like if I'm, I quite like the thought of something that's like Victorian and that, you know what I mean? Like it's got like a story behind it, but then I don't know, it feels quite sort of, even though I don't believe in ghosts, quite haunty.
A lot of people died there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This might have been a Church of England type of, I don't know what it was, but
less ghosts.
I feel ghosts if there are ghosts, and I felt none.
Yeah.
I think it had been modernized enough. It was deconsecrated. My Nana made sure to check because I think a priest has to go in and take Jesus out.
Right.
So you can cook so in there and live in there and fuck in
otherwise, he's knocking about for ages.
Yeah. You've got to get Jesus out before the double glazing goes in.
Are you quite religious then? And do you believe in ghosts and stuff like that?
I believe in the possibility of all the things which I do not understand.
Yeah.
So, you know, space, ghosts, aliens, all that kind of, I don't know.
You believe in space. That's kind of you.
I hardly believe in space.
Yeah. It's nothing there. It's just flat.
It's flat. Come on. We all know it.
Well, I don't like, and I've talked about this before, and you get in a lot of trouble from the space exploration community because I dislike the amount of money that goes into space. There's like a Space Force galaxy army out in space.
Yeah.
I really like, I hate that it comes from math. So I'm supposed to believe that a pencil and a paper, someone writing equations, some absolute nerd makes equations and then extrapolates them and says, oh, the universe is a billion million miles wide. And also with this equation, I saw this article the other day that said two galaxies had collided and they were bleeding the cold gas of 10,000 suns. And I just feel like, you don't know that.
What does that mean?
Yeah. And there is no way we can prove him wrong by reading that bit of paper. You just go, fair enough. Yeah. That's, I think
are you sure about that?
To me.
Yeah. I've done the math three times. Checked out.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. Do you know, there is something in that though, that the fact that humans are constantly trying to look into space or like even like the sea and stuff like that, like anything that's unknown, right?
Yeah.
But not actually fixing the problems of like just humans in general, like, you know, anxieties or the way we think or stuff like that, you know, because that things can be pumped way more into that to be a better place, right?
Yeah, or intuition, like,
yeah,
yeah,
but they haven't even been to the bottom of the sea. Like, what the fuck are you doing in space? Going, oh, Pluto's a star. No, Pluto's a planet. No, actually, Jupiter's moon, we feel. Oh, that's the other thing. The other day, Jupiter has 72 moons. And the 72nd one, they've decided, is filled with octopuses.
Wow. No way. That's not an official fact, is it?
Yes, it is.
No way.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I've become obsessed by science lies.
Yeah. Isn't there another planet, like, that's just casually been chucked in there that we didn't know about?
See, because they didn't tell us anything for a while and they went, all the, you know, we have all this space money. People want a new fact. What should it be?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we've got this intern who just discovered a planet It was genuinely an intern.
Wow.
And they're going to take it back in a few years. They'll go, oh, forget it. No, yeah. That was just a smudge.
But we did name a chocolate bar after one of the planets. So that's quite cool.
Yeah.
One of the most delicious, I think.
Really? Are you a Mars person?
I don't love sweets. I would much rather savory, but same. I like a Mars. Yeah. I like a Snickers.
It's quite old school. Not saying you're old. I mean, it's quite like one of the originals. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm more of a dime bar or a crunchy. Ooh,
nice.
I need the crunch.
Yeah. That's dime bar is very international. It's quite Czech of you. I know not a Czech thing, but I imagine in Prague they have a lot of dime.
Oh, yeah. And then you might catch me with a little Milka bar as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Ooh. Very airport.
Yeah.
Hey guys, it's Ron here. Coming back at you like Cleopatra. Trying out a new catchphrase. But I hope y'all guys enjoy the podcast. And remember, all the links will be down at the bottom. All the recos down at the bottom. And I hope y'all enjoy them.
Obviously, you know, like you said, you've been lucky enough to still have. And I guess like you said, some work's been cancelled. But in our line of work, we have had to just convert what we're doing into different things, I guess.
Yeah.
But like, apart from that, have you had much time to like chill and watch things? And like, have you got any recommendations?
Oh my, no, because you guys told me about Love After a Lockup.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Did you watch it?
All I do now is watch it. And I have every hookup to get every series of it that you could want in your life.
Amazing.
I have become a Love After Lockup expert. It's all that I'm interested in. And I'm not watching anything else. I don't want to see any COVID adjacent material. I don't want to watch any drama. I don't need to be moved by It's a Sin. You know, I already understand that community and its issues. I only have time for people with control issues writing to incarcerated people. That's
It's insane. And I know you had to dig deep to get that. You had to go deeper into some sort
dark
of
web.
Illicit sources, because that's what I have to do as well. But
do you know what my hookup is?
Yeah.
It is called All Black TV. So it's ALLBLK.TV.
Okay.
And you need to fiddle your location a little bit.
Yeah.
Which I'm not proud to say.
Yeah.
And VPN. Then you need to lie about your postcode on your credit card.
Okay.
And
You're still using your credit card, so you're putting into, you know.
You're paying.
It's cool.
You're contributing. Love paying for art.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that's what they say about you.
Yes.
Everyone says
Hate space, but she will pay.
This woman will pay for art.
Yeah. That's
the best streaming service that I've ever found.
That's sick. I'm going to check that out. My friend's got something similar called Embee, and I couldn't work it out, so I just end up using his password, and that's how I watched it. But I think there's a few little like extra services that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You can find them, boy.
I see. Do you know what I always assume? I'm like, oh, it's like, you know, back in the day, you used to get like a chipped like cable box or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm paying for it. I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, I thought it was, it's advertised. I don't know about it.
Yeah. You got to have the hookup with the card.
Yeah. Hugo, you need to watch it though, man. Oh, and Catherine, to anyone out there listening, we went on Catherine Ryan's podcast as well. So check that out. But that's where we spoke about Life After Lockup. But you told me to watch 90 Day Fiancé.
Yeah.
And I watched
Fire.
Yeah, I watched the first series, man, so far. And it's incredible, man.
Who's in the first? Is Baby Love in the first series?
It's quite dark, though. Some of it's quite dark. Like,
it's very dark.
Like the guy, one of the guys, you know, is quite like weird virgin type guys that are also not just virgin, but verging on serial killers sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, hello.
Yeah.
Incels.
Yeah. It's quite hard to watch some of it.
Like, yeah, men are weird, yeah.
Yeah, like there's like a Brazilian girl, really beautiful, but she looks like she's about 13. And he like helps her. She wants to become a model.
Yeah.
And he's a Mormon. Is it a Mormon?
So many of them are Mormon.
Oh my, really?
I haven't seen this series.
Crazy, yeah. No, but it's sick.
Well, there's crossover in the series because what I love about Love After Lockup, which again, we spoke about, if you haven't seen it, it's people who fall in love with prisoners and then they get out and the power structures shift so dramatically and it causes all this conflict. 90 Day Fiancé is exactly the same, where there's a balance in power and that power is played with and it shifts.
That's a good point.
It's so creepy to see these mostly guys, though there are women.
Oh, I haven't seen that way around yet.
Yeah, there are older blonde women who...
Maybe love. I always, for even right to the end, I'm always still trying to think, is this genuine?
Like,
no, you said before when we were talking about Married at First Sight Australia, and you're saying it's like really set up, you know, or just like, I mean, they all like, to, the way they're edited and produced, it's kind of all like that. But I feel like with this, it's not just, it's not, you're not just getting people on there because they want to bump up their Instagram or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Or like, they are real cases, man. And like, obviously the producer hypes it all up or whatever, but
There's an imitable type of innocence to it.
Yeah.
Where a lot of these contributors don't even know about American television or anything else. And they don't have Instagram. They're just like, I would like to eat today. It's sad. You write about the darkness. And that's as much drama as I can handle. This is why I don't watch scripted dramas.
Yeah. That's fair enough, Matt. I mean, real life is a drama. So, you know, you don't need it sometimes.
Yes, it is. Yeah, but especially thank you now. So much for telling me about Love After Lockup.
No, thank you too, man. Did it all. Trash TV trade-off.
Ask. If you don't ask, boy, you don't get. Ask.
Let's get back to the beginning of your life.
Oh.
When you were born. No. When, what, like, creatively, what, how did you get into what you're doing now, I guess, was like, stand-up comedy your first thing, let's say?
No, it's funny because I'm writing a book right now, so I'm having to go back through my memory.
Okay.
And I've always been pretty square, never abused too many substances, so I remember pretty much my entire life. I didn't want to be a comedian. I liked the idea of being a boss and I hated people being in charge of me, but I valued comedy, but it wasn't something that I was trying to get into. I thought that the best thing that you could be was gentle and soft and pretty, because those were all the girls at my school that everyone liked the most. And every time I spoke, I was confusing people or upsetting people or offending people. I didn't understand why my language wasn't the language of, you know, the popular kids at my school. So I started working at Hooters and I felt like that would be a good training ground to be like a cheerleader type of girl.
Well, I was going to say, and is this like where in like the town or city or whatever, where you come from then? Was it like...
Oh, my town was not cosmopolitan enough to have a Hooters. I moved to Toronto for university and that is when
I started. Okay.
Yeah. And there was a comedy club next to the Hooters and I wanted to go there. And then I started putting my name down. It's so amazing when you're just a 20-year-old.
You just started to put your name down.
Yeah. Like I did not ever give a shit what anybody thought, really.
That's sick. But what that says, I mean, that's not normal though for that age as well. Like, you know, like, especially at that, like, I feel like the younger you are, the more you care. You might be braver, but the more you care about what people think about you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I was both. But then when you move from a really small town to a big city, you're all of a sudden anonymous.
Yeah,
so I didn't tell anyone I was going.
So you're like reinventing yourself in a sense.
Yeah. And in Toronto, who am I? Like I'm some girl who gets on stage on a Wednesday amateur night. Nobody knew me, where in a small town, everyone's famous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything that you do, everyone knows about it. So I wanted to be this good girl, but it was hard for me. And then I thought, okay, well, I will do these amateur nights. And that's when I can really stretch my legs and be a little bit, whatever I am, like explore that bit that seems to piss everybody off and then I'll get rid of it. So that was the plan. I was just doing it for fun. I wasn't trying to be a comedian. I was like, I'll just do this for me and then I'll get rid of it.
And did you plan any of it or did you just go there and just start talking?
You do 5 minutes on an amateur night. So I wrote down bullet points, which is exactly the same as I do today. You never write out a script or anything.
Yeah.
Of like things I wanted to talk about, like my flatmates and things about my life, things about my sisters. My mom that year had got me tickets to the Dr. Phil show for my birthday and like a Paris Hilton perfume. And I just was like, that says a lot about how my family views me. So I was kind of talking about that, like just stuff. And I did really well. And then the more I started to do comedy, the worse I did for a while, because you see what works in the room. And most of what worked at that time was like very like race-based or I hate my wife-based.
Sort of old school kind of crowd-pleasing vibes.
Right. So I tried to do that for a while. And it was really bad.
You tried to do I hate my wife for a while.
Basically.
The bloody wife's kicking off.
So it doesn't make sense when she does it, but it's funny.
Yeah. It was just bad. I was bad for a while. And that's, I think, part of your journey. Mm-hmm. And then the more I did comedy, I found a community there. I found like, you know, my tribe, like people that I loved. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing comedy more and doing a little bit of comedy for money. So it was all like very much by accident.
And do you feel like it got worse because suddenly you're trying to work out what that magic was and overthink it sort of thing?
Yeah, I think a lot of performers start doing impressions of other performers.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll never get anywhere being someone else.
Yeah, it's true. But in a way, that's the only way you learn as well at the same time. Because it's like you're doing something you know, but then you end up finding your own voice.
It took a while, though. It took until I moved to the UK, and then I worked in an office, and my boyfriend at the time wanted to be a comedian. I'd met him in the comedy club, which is something I absolutely don't recommend. Like, fuck the bartender, fuck the security. Do not touch the comics.
They're troubled.
They're so troubled. Yeah. And that didn't work out for him here.
Yeah.
And then I had my daughter and I was looking to go back to work. But then I was like, oh my gosh, daycare costs more than I earn at my office job.
Yeah, it's not a joke.
I was like, how am I going to do that? And then I thought, well, I do comedy already for a laugh. So if I really actually try, then I can stay home with my daughter all day. I can bring her to some gigs because I have friends there who could hold her. And, you know, if you wear a baby into a bar, nobody asks you to take it off.
What made you come to the UK, though? Was it the, like, almost the sort of connection that Canadians speak about with the UK more so than America kind of thing?
I mean, I'm Irish. My dad is Irish, so I'm an Irish citizen. It was really easy for me to live and work here, but it wasn't my choice. I only came sort of for a visit, and my boyfriend at the time wanted to come here and be like this famous comedian.
Oh, got you. Yeah.
So I was like, well, okay, I'll work in my office and I'll help you out. And
you beat him to it.
Yeah.
Got it. I didn't mean to.
That's even better.
I'm just
so bloody talented. I just fell into it.
God, I'm so good at this. This crowd's easy.
He's trying really hard, fuming.
Yeah. I'm going to go and write on a bench by the river.
Right. I'm only good at it because I'm a woman. So, of course, it's easier for me. And if he were a woman, he'd have all these opportunities too. But, you know, it's just so hard for a white man.
Oh, that's the...
Exactly. Yeah. So when did you have the realization that you'd want to maybe stay here and it's kind of working for you sort of thing?
Well, I felt like it would be unfair to leave. I never really tried to go back to Canada with my daughter, but I mean, I always thought it was really important that she have a good relationship with her dad and see him a lot. So, I mean, it's just not something that I even entertained. I was just like, well, I live here and it has to work here. And then she was born in 2009 and I was gigging. I was like paying the rent. I was doing okay. And then I started doing TV. Like I did 8 out of 10 Cats in 2012. So she was 3.
Yeah. That's where I know you from originally.
That's the first, you know, legitimate panel show stuff that I did. And after that, I did more panel shows and then I could tour more and people would come to see me on purpose. So the ball started rolling. I had a career here. I had a few friends here. It just felt like, I don't know why. It was just not, going home was just not an option.
Yeah, yeah. And where did that jump from? You know, because like stand-up comedy's hard, and there's loads of stand-up comedians. Where does the jump happen from doing that to going on telly as well? And how different is that?
You just get invited to do different competitions or to do different auditions. So I did a few new open mic, like, you know, brand new comic competitions, which still exist today. They're a really good way for agents and producers to see you. Mm-hmm. And then you get signed to an agent. And I've been with the same agent that I was with since before my daughter was born, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And she loyal. Was, I am loyal. No, but she's just great. And she, everybody emails me to say, you piece of shit, you must have a really good fucking agent. So I listen.
Yeah, sick.
And then she and I just then would try to get bigger shows or bigger auditions. And what the production company do for 8 out of 10 cats is they invite new comedians into the office to do a run through, which is sort of like a little panel show in a boardroom. And you play the game, you do the show. And Jimmy comes in kind of your second or third audition and see how it goes. And if the producers like you, if the channel, I think they watch a tape probably. And that's how they choose new comedians to break through and to come on the show for the first time.
Okay.
Wow, that's mental. I mean, me and Hugo have never done stand-up or any of those shows.
You should. You definitely could.
Oh, man. No, it terrifies me. Yeah, it terrified that. I've got so much respect for you that, like, you know, and the fact that you kind of seemingly effortlessly went from that to a panel show, which for me feels a bit like sometimes like it could be quite a tough environment, quite a dick swinging competition.
Competitive kind of.
Yeah.
Like, that scares me.
It never really affected you? You just kind of felt like
I have a really big dick.
Perfect. Because mine's tiny. So I don't
think. Yeah.
I just felt like I was not afraid. I was never afraid of failure or of trying something new ever.
Yeah, that's good.
And I was good, made fun of, I think, for a long time. And then my mom in high school started dating this really young guy, and in a small town, like, you're such a target. I remember being just a target for a long time. And I was inspired by people who didn't care. And I grew into someone who largely, like, I care about certain things, but I thought, well, am I going to sit at home and just never try anything because I'm scared?
Yeah.
And then in the green room right before we filmed that 8 out of 10 cats, and I remember I was so thin. I looked amazing and really young and really poor. I had wellies on because I had enough money to buy this like little yellow dress from Zara, but I didn't have any dress shoes. So I just wore these brown wellies that I had. And I thought, that's fine because they'll be under the desk. And Hannibal Buress was on that episode.
Oh, wow. How would you like him?
So did I. So do I. And Sean Locke, obviously, John Richardson. All these comedians that I felt really intimidated by. Of course, Jimmy. Yeah. I sort of had a little panic before going on stage. I thought, oh, no. What have I done? But that was great because I just decided, well, I'll never be Hannibal Buress and I'll never be Sean Locke and I'll never. So I might as well just go and do like my angle of how I see this playing out. And if they get my voice, they get my voice. And if they don't, they don't. I had nothing to lose.
I'm fucking Catherine Ryan is what you told
me.
That's the sort of romantic story. And I looked in the mirror, I went, I'm fucking Catherine Ryan. Fuck these pricks.
I mean, you got nothing to lose. I was like a single mom in wellies. Like,
Yeah. In wellies as well, which later became quite fashionable as well. And you kicked that off, didn't you, I think?
You started the whole Hunter thing.
Yeah.
They were not official Wellington boots, I'm sorry to say. Like knockoffs from the market. Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, yo!
Yo!
Ha ha!
Ha 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 ha!
Will everybody shut the fuck up?
Settle down, settle down!
You're in tune to the Chatting Shit Podcast!
UK stand up!
The world's greatest!
The best there ever was that ever lived!
Series 2 out now, motherfucker!
Oh gosh!
Ha ha!
Are you ready?
Check it! Check
Are
it!
You ready?
Check it!
So, like, were you just going from show to show sort of thing? And did it just kind of all to spiral from there? Or how was that?
I think 8 out of 10 Cats was transformative because after that, I was invited to a lot more places. I didn't have to ask as often to get on open mics. So when you're a new comedian, you do a lot of work for free.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of work for exposure and experience.
Yeah.
And it costs you money to take the night bus and whatever. But then I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And they started to have one woman on things. And I just was given a lot of opportunities. And I tried as hard as I could to make those opportunities fruitful. And I got to do Mock the Week and Buzzcocks and QI and all the shows. And as soon as you do that, it's just easy. People are motivated by what they see on TV, I think, and they'll come to see you on purpose. That's always the goal. If you're a comedian, that you're not a surprise on a mixed bill, is that people come to see you on purpose. So I had good management and I would do small tours, little art centers and things. And then I just kept doing that. I mean, and I never felt comfortable. I still don't feel comfortable, especially after this year. I don't know if I can do another tour. I'm supposed to in September. We'll see if I can write one.
It always feels
sure
like that. But it does. I know exactly what you mean. It always feels like that. Like I can imagine like all live shows. Like when I imagine that now, I'm like, God, that's something I used to do. Like, I couldn't imagine like running on stage, but you do. It's like what you said before. It's like you have the bit of anxiety and you just do it. And what are you not going to do it? No, you are going to do it. But it's so easy to think when you're just like sitting around at home as well. It's quite like a daunting thought, I'd imagine.
Do you guys have stuff booked or are you waiting to see how it goes with performance venues?
Oh, performance stuff. We've got one thing where we've got like an Amsterdam weekender thing that's going to happen in October, hopefully.
Yeah,
you know,
sounds like it will.
Yeah. And our stuff is always off the back of stuff we release. So like the PJDN film is like ready to go, and that's going to come out in August. So it's like, we wouldn't have been doing anything tour wise before that anyway. So it's like, you know, as long as it all happens after then, it's sweet sort of thing. And have you got stuff booked in for around that time as well then, or like later?
Yeah, September, and it feels like it will go ahead, but we just don't know.
But with the news we just got, it feels good, right?
Yeah,
I don't believe those men for a second.
Know, but I've just got to the point where I want to now. Do you know what I mean?
A bit of hope.
I just want it, you know what I mean? Because the whole time I'd be the one that's like almost relishing in the fact that I don't believe them and rolling my eyes when someone else says it. I go, and I'd be like, nah, it's another not till the end of the year, mate. Not till the end of the year.
It's all bollocks, mate.
But now I'm just like, probably, it'd be sweet.
Hopefully.
You've never been in this position. You got to watch out for posh boys telling you what you want to hear.
Yeah, it's true.
That's Wait, how do you know get what? Pregnant.
Do you know? Good point. How did it then go? What was the next step then for you to get like, you know, the Netflix bag and all that sort of stuff? Was that just a natural progression?
I think it's baby steps all along because even when I was promoting The Duchess, which is my sitcom on Netflix.
Yeah.
Loads of journalists were saying, oh, is this such a breakthrough for you? Is it going to change your life? And I was looking at them and I was like, what do you think this business is? No, it's just going to be another little thing that some people like and some people think is shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then if I'm lucky, I get to do another little thing that some people like and some people think is shit. You know, we don't all have the transformative year on Instagram that Cardi B had when Bodak Yellow came out.
Yeah,
it doesn't work like that. So everything is baby steps. Every tour has been a few more people than the tour before. And then you get a little boost sometimes when people respond to some project. But
lots of people look at the big, like Cardi B, for example. That's kind of like, that's a success story that I think people want.
But you know what? But I feel like it's also a different time. And England is different to America. Yeah. You don't do a series and get a mansion off a series here.
No, you know we're as big as like Tennessee or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like, but you already had like Netflix specials before that though, right? With the stand-up.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was really lucky to get those. Again, like I'm always, all my stand-up is always about how you should be independent and you don't need men for this and that. But it's been ill-fated relationships that have led me to professional success. Like when I moved to the UK, that was for a relationship. Mm-hmm. And then I broke up, or someone else broke, he broke up with me actually. We were in some rocky path. And I remember he broke up with me on FaceTime while I was filming something in the UK and he was in America. Wow, and wow. I was like, okay, when I was really hungry and I was eating a burrito. And then he said to me, I can't believe that you wouldn't even stop eating your burrito.
How can you eat?
Yeah. And I was like, listen, I'll never stop eating burrito for nobody.
Do you think it was because you were filming as well? He was like, fucking, I can't hack this. This is...
No.
You're holding up to a mirror to me and I'm shit.
No, this guy was more successful than the last. But I mean, he was so nice.
But not you. I like that he's, yeah, he was still more successful than the last guy, not me. That's insane.
But still not really as... Not as good as me.
Yeah.
But then I kind of flipped out and I was like, oh gosh, because I was 35 and I thought, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I do need to be with this guy. Maybe I'm, because I'd never really been single. And I thought, oh my gosh, I don't show him the respect that he deserves. And I don't do, and I didn't stop eating my burrito. So I'll fly out to LA and I'll do this grand gesture and like show him that I need him. And I will take all this time off work and prove it to him. So I went to LA and I stayed at the Roosevelt Hotel, which I stayed at once when I was younger and went to the Playboy Mansion when I was 22, as you do. And it is not a place for adults. They were doing this party called Milk Milk Lemonade Party. And it was just like naked, half naked teenagers chucking each other in the pool. And we were trying to have this tearful breakup chat on the balcony.
Oh my God.
And while I was there, my agent was like, why don't you meet with Three Arts, which is like Dave Becky, Louis C.K.'s agent, Kevin Hart's agent, Maya Rudolph's agent, Amy Poehler's agent, Tina Fey's agent. It's like the agent. Yeah. And I was like, well, okay, as long as I'm there, I guess I'll try to do some work. And then he signed me and his associate, Josh Lieberman, who's the now, like, I just love those guys so much. And they're so smart and so talented. And it's because of that, that I started to get American work.
Oh, and wow.
So, I know.
And
I got really lucky.
Do you feel that...
All because I wouldn't stop eating my burrito.
Yeah, that's it. I quite like the thought of you standing on that balcony with him with a burrito in your hand and throw it away.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're like, look how little I care about this now.
Yeah,
it's delicious. As he turns his head.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
It's going to get cold. Not as good. Still good, but not as good.
Do you feel like there's a big difference in, I mean, there always was, I guess, but I don't know if it's different now because of the internet, but like a big difference in like British comedy versus like American comedy and their Monday set. Not that you're British, but you know, I guess Canadian as well. It's a dry sense of humor. It's more like British humor, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of American comedy is so great and a lot of American comedy is dire.
So how did your style translate to that audience?
To the American audience?
Yeah.
Not that well. I filmed my first Netflix special at the Hammersmith Apollo in London. Nice. And people get me in the UK. They've kind of seen me now for a little bit. But I filmed my second Netflix special in Los Angeles. And I don't know. I think some people were there for comedy and other people, you know, just couldn't get tickets to the prices right. I don't know what happened, but a lot of them looked like they felt attacked and they didn't understand what was happening.
Yeah, I feel like they get paranoid about things being mean when it's...
No, they're mean.
Really? Is it in comedy?
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, when you get like American remakes, like I love The Office, the American remake, but yeah, it's a lot warmer, and it feels like they can't have characters that are like.
You're right, but I don't think their stand-up is as warm at all.
Oh, yeah.
Got it. I think when they go to see stand-up, they're like, make me laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
in England, it's more like we're going out for a laugh. So they're a bit more.
Oh, okay. You have,
from my experience, and this isn't every American comedian, obviously, but when you're gigging in the Comedy Store or, you know, just the LA clubs that you can get to, I think a lot of those comedians are very funny. But again, a lot of it seemed to me to be less subtle, certainly, but also about drugs and about race and quite aggressive.
It's a lot about race, and there's a lot of accents as well to this day.
Yeah.
There's like guys doing like a Chinese, like a really dated Chinese accent and stuff. I'm like, what is going on? Like, it's just insane to me. But I feel like they're a lot more about that in America in general. Like, highlighting differences and race differences. Do you know what I mean?
Certainly. And when I started doing comedy in Canada, some of those influences were there as well. And that was, you can't help but subscribe to the you know, you read the room, like that's the vibe. That's what everyone does. So that's what you do. And then when I moved to the UK, there was a lot more just literary stuff or introspective stuff or alternative stuff that was mainstream. And it leaves you so much more room. But then when you go over to America, and to them, I kind of have a British accent. I don't.
Really?
I just,
that's mad.
It's not a British accent, but it sounds.
To us, you've got an American accent.
Yeah. I know. I do have an American accent, but I think.
Yeah, I had it in New York where I was leaving a restaurant with people I was working with. It's quite important. And this car pulled up and it screeched up and this guy went, "Yo, shorty, you want Molly weed?" And I was like, with business people. And I was like, no, thanks. And then he was like, "Yo, where are you from, Canada?" And I was like, no, London. got back in the car.
Yeah, they can't hear us. It's so funny. And I think I might just sound a bit posh to them or something, like kind of like an asshole. I don't know. And I don't shout. I feel like they're very loud.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's when I went to, I mean, I love it. Like, and it's not like I went to Middle America. It's like nice multicultural and that, like New York was sick, but they're so loud. And over, like, Hugo, what was that story when you were like screamed like, across
the room? Yeah. The burger restaurant. He was, "Have a great day." And I was like, "You too, man." He went, "No, you have a great day." And I was like, "Okay, you too, man." No, I'm telling you, man. All right, I get it.
Do you know what pissed me and Hugo off when we was out there? That they don't really say you're welcome. And you'll be like, "Oh, thanks very much." They go, "Uh-huh." And like, what?
Yeah.
You're like, what? Whoa.
Yeah, well, they go, "Yep."
Yeah, but we're over polite here. Like, we apologize seven times going through a doorway. Do you know what I mean? Like, we apologize for existing. So
when I first moved here, people go, "You all right? Are you all right?
Yeah, right.
I thought,
"You're right.
Pardon me, like, yes.
Fuck, I seem like I'm not all right."
I worried that everyone was concerned for me. I thought, what's happening? But I've been here in 14 years, so it's been a long time and whatever. I'm just a bit weird, I think, gigging in America. They can tell I'm not from there.
Yeah, for sure. Do you prefer doing it here than over there kind of thing? Do you feel like a lot more at home here now after all this time?
Yeah, I feel like we all prefer performing where we are most well-received.
Yeah, true. And also where you understand things as well more, I guess, right? Yeah. If it's your home. Right.
But it's cool to do in America. It's a challenge. It's a different type of challenge. I've done some comedy in New York. I did a weekend at Caroline's, kind of near Times Square. Mm. And that was, you know, it feels good to be nervous again and to be out of your depth again and to win over strangers. But because you see some comedians who are properly famous in America and you can tell with some of them, not all, you can tell with some that they haven't had to win over any strangers in a while.
Mm.
And that can be a hindrance when everybody's just like, "Oh, yay, it's you." It's like, "Oh, well, you don't want to be a YouTuber."
Exactly. They can fart on the mic and everything's fine. Sort of
Yeah, they've come for a picture.
Yeah, exactly. Like, again, me and Hugo are outsiders when we talk about this, right? But, like, I always imagine it that it's quite, like, I don't know, like super insecure and competitive and bitchy in like in a comedy club in the back room. Like,
I mean, yeah, some of the, I think the girls in this country, or the women, I still say girls and it upsets people.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to admit it, Hugo. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, they're girls in there. Oh,
yeah. Chicks.
Yeah, yeah.
Broads. My grandpa called them goddamn broads.
Broads, yeah. Yeah.
Smooth guy.
Yeah.
I feel like with the goddamn broads in this country, we are all very friendly and very supportive. And I genuinely have never felt any jealousy or animosity toward or from any comic. I just don't, for real. When other female performers especially do well, I'm so excited. Mm. And I really feel like I'm not even talking shit. I feel like it's a collective effort. And
I guess that says more about you though. If you're, you know, you're not receiving any of that because you're not putting any of that out there. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know. Yeah. But then I hear about the boys.
Yeah.
It can be bitchier for them. And that's not all of them. Like, I would never, ever in my life say that about Rob Beckett or Ramesh or Tom.
Oh, yeah. Shout out Rob, man. Yeah, yeah. Shout out those guys.
You know, I think the cream rises and they're not petty or anything. But there are some, I think, you hear mostly from older headliners who had it differently in a different time when they start getting criticized for being, you know, not woke enough, or they see the newcomers getting on television and their skinny jeans. They can be quite catty. I hear that from them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I feel like all those people you mentioned there, they're all like working class as well. And like,
oh yeah.
They, you know what I mean? I think there's something to say about that as well, that they kind of appreciate where they're at. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they lived a bit of life and, you know what I mean?
It's They had real world experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it wasn't handed, they have to graft.
Yeah, we've all had jobs. We've all been to Hooters.
Yeah. We've all worked
there. Yeah. I'll be down.
Yeah, what, to work there?
Yeah. Let's do a little Saturday.
Yeah.
Get me out of the house. Oh my gosh,
the kitchen guys were the best. We were so close and such good friends with the kitchen guys. And then every once in a while we'd have a man apply and he thought that he was really groundbreaking and he'd be like, here is my CV and I want to work at Hooters. And he'd think, you know, he was changing the world because you couldn't discriminate against him based on sex. But you can. Just go.
They do it at Hooters.
Well, they could open like a Cox. And have roosters.
Yeah, or like, and stuff things down their trousers until the crotch slide across the tables.
And the hot dogs are served by the crotch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything's sick. At crotch height.
With Duchess, was that the first thing that you, I mean, outside of stand-up, was that the first series that you actually wrote, right? Because you created and wrote that as well.
Yeah.
So what was that like? And it always interests me as well, because me and Hugo, you know, we weren't trained and we sort of learned on the job, and it's something, you know, making a series is something we had to learn. So like, it interests me to see how different that would be to what your kind of original craft was, you know?
Well, as you know, it's far more collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
When I do stand up, everybody just leaves me alone, and then I show up and I either have a show or I don't, and then people either laugh or they don't, and I can edit it myself.
Yeah, you got a lot more control in that sense, right? It's just something that's just from you. How did that feel then, having to like have other people involved in it then?
I mean, not great. I think it was good in some respects. I needed help. I wanted help in terms of structure, and I understood that there were things that I didn't know. But then there were certain things about it that I thought were slightly dicey, cliquey sometimes. Like, they didn't really want my wardrobe person, my stylist, who I've worked with for 8 years, or my makeup artist.
Mm.
They were kind of like, well, you can't have your own team. And I was like, why?
Yeah, there's always weird rules.
Yeah, weird rules.
Yeah,
and then always. My team, like, they didn't want my team in my car.
Mm.
And then one day, and these are my best friends. Like, my makeup artist lived with me for the 3 months that we did The Duchess, because she's from Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, you know, they can do just you, but we're not paying them like the full rate, and they can't go in your car this one day. So I was like, fine. So give my car to someone else and we'll take an Uber. And I took a Uber exec from my trailer to the set because I was like, I'm not playing these fucking games. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
And this was pre-COVID. So it wasn't like they can't go in your car because of COVID. Yeah. It was just, I don't know. Some of the stuff I was not about. But other elements were amazing. I got to know and learn from some of the most incredible comedy actors. I felt so touched that they wanted to say the words that I'd written and that they gave such good performances. And I did want to learn things, but I'm also not 23. I've sold out loads of tours. I have loads of specials. I'm not an idiot. So I don't need to be told like every single thing. So finding that balance, I think, was a little bit of a challenge for me, but I did learn a lot. Mm.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because we've had so many little battles like that. And you know, some things are, you know, fair enough. It makes more sense, but some things are, it's just because that's the way it's done.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any
some
sense.
Things are weird. Yeah. Like I can get an Uber there in the morning. It's cool. And they're like, no, you got to wait for someone's coming to Citroen Berlingo at 5:30.
Yeah.
2 hours early.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, it's cool. Like, I'm capable.
Yeah.
Please. No.
Yeah.
Okay.
So many times there's just really strange things. And I guess it's because everyone's petrified of losing their job or you know what I mean? And that's how it's always been done. And TV's really like that, isn't it? And
you
say it can't change, you know, like when we first started filming on the first day, you'd have a runner that literally follows you to the toilet and you can hear their walkie-talkie.
Yeah.
That you're having a 10-1.
He's just finishing.
And you're like, yes, exactly. Yeah. And you're like, okay, let's start again. We don't need to do this here. There's other ways around
back.
It. Yeah. And also it can be fun. It doesn't need to be a military operation on a comedy as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. And I just think you guys are creatives. I would consider myself most of the time a creative. It's so counterintuitive to say to us, that we do this because it's how it's done.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
Well, there's a better way to do it if you want to know. No.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier if we just do it like this.
Everything we've ever done in life hasn't been done, you know, because that's the way it's done. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. But it feels good to talk to someone else.
I've never acted before, but yet you're paying for a TV show. Take a
this
few
isn't
more
the way it's done. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You've already made the biggest risk.
You fucking moron. Now let's carry on. Yeah.
You're a moron. So let's carry on that way.
We're losing you loads of money. Let's lose you some more. Come on.
Yeah.
But I think the only way to successfully execute a project is to do it authentically and to make it as much from the heart as you can as the writers. And you do need, you know, maybe notes or structure help along the way, but you have to keep that core of it. And as soon as you lose that, then who are you making it for? Because there's no such thing as a project that everyone's going to unanimously love.
Yeah.
Mm. And with all these different cooks in the kitchen, you know, sometimes they would say, there was like one spokesperson that I spoke to all the time. And that person would speak for like other execs and Netflix and the UK production company and producers and whomever. And that person would say, well, we feel, and I'd be like, who's we?
Yeah.
And to be like, well, we feel. I'm like, I'm supposed to be part of we.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Netflix.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even just Netflix. Like, it was just such a head fuck. Cause I was like,
everyone.
What is this we culture? Who's we?
We've all been talking about you for hours in the boardroom.
Yeah, exactly.
And we don't like you.
But why am I not part of we? Because this is my show.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think at the end of the day, for my project anyway, that, you know, it came out the way I wanted to. I think they did an amazing job. It was great. Yeah. It was just a culture shock to have people argue with me and be like, no, Catherine, she wouldn't say that. I'm like... I'm she.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's nice to hear from you. And just so you know as well, it happens to us the whole time, you know, but we're always proud of the show in the end.
Yeah.
And it's about those little battles. And, you know, sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. Sweet. It's just stressful, but that's how you get a good show made, right?
Yeah.
It's how you
I will win.
Win.
Yeah. You will win in the end. Yeah. One time we were filming like on a high street and I was like, there's a Starbucks just opposite. And I was like, can I get a Starbucks? And they were like, no. Like, you have to use these shitty sachets. And I was like, nah, I'm not using that. I've had them for weeks. Can I just run over? And they were like, no. And I was like, all right, take my card and ask everyone on set if they want a coffee. And then they had to do it at that point. We're like, okay, all right.
Amazing.
Cost me loads,
because they're so petrified that basically all...
Or I'm so petty I had to win.
Any logical, normal life things, like you know how to cross a road and not get run over. But in that moment, they're worried that you're going to get run over because you don't know how to cross the road, basically.
Yeah.
I bet it killed them too.
Dead. Yeah.
They're drinking their like caramel frappe. They're like, fuck.
Yeah.
This fucking delicious, God damn it.
It's fucking delicious, annoying.
He won.
Yeah.
£180 down though.
Yeah, man. Ooh. So where do you see the future of everything, Catherine? Later in the year, you're going to be touring, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think the beautiful thing about this pandemic, whatever people are calling it, whatever the most annoying thing
the to demi.
Call it. That's like a cute way of telling your kid, little pandemic, don't worry about it.
Don't worry. Wash your hands and be fine.
I think we've learned that horrific injustices can be just around the corner and you can't predict for anything. Yeah. And we've learned that, and that's been so harrowing. But I think then it must mean that the opposite is true and that you can just have really lovely surprises around the corner too.
Yeah, yeah.
So I definitely choose to look at it like that. So, I mean, what do I plan in the future? Oh my gosh. I mean, I don't know. I'd love to do the tour and I'd love to finish my book on time and not get sued.
Yeah.
And have that's to always pay good thing. The advance back. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to do acting unless it's funny. Like, I love comedy. I would never do anything dramatic because I just don't see the point. Like, I hate, you know, I don't know. I know there are so many people who dislike comedy. They go, I don't like that genre. I don't watch any comedy. I don't get it. Have you ever met one of those people?
I've got friends like that, but they're morons because you do find things funny. And
Yeah. But you've just decided that.
Yeah, exactly. That's your thing. You don't watch comedy.
Yeah, I'm not.
You
a comedy
do find
guy.
Things funny. You're human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My thing is, I just want to have a laugh as often as I can.
Yeah.
Mm. And I would like to start writing letters to prisoners who need money.
Yeah. Good start.
And that's why you're earning all this money for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fall in love with one and maybe he cheats on me when he gets out.
Yeah.
And then become really controlling with where they are because you prefer them in a prison.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow, DJ Ostrich, why you stop the show? Well, I'll tell you, bro, this is the most important part. It's the question everybody wants to know. No, it is not what is your favorite jean fit. No, it is not what is your favorite size inch television. It's what is your favorite sandwich?
Catherine, we're sort of winding down towards the end of the show right now. Just winding, chilling, like dim lighting. And
One leg skanking in the living
room.
One leg skanking.
And this is one of the most important parts of the show, actually. It's what's your favorite sandwich?
Oh, I'm so unpopular because I don't eat bread.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, okay. Well, no, we're going to have to remix this.
No, you don't have to.
Okay,
But I'll tell you what I do, which is disgusting. Sometimes I eat the middles of sandwiches.
Okay. Nice. What's your favorite sandwich to eat the middle of?
Wait. A burrito counts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Handhelds. Yeah. It could be a burrito, a bowl.
Bread.
Yeah.
Really? Well, I love burritos. I would love a really spicy, you know, not UK spicy because you guys just don't get it.
No, not us guys. Those guys.
Those guys. The old posh
the old white
guys.
The old white fuckers. Yeah.
The old guys that own Leon.
I'm half Iraqi, so I'm...
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. I'm full British and
red faced.
Horrible. Yeah.
So I like a spicy chicken burrito that has a little extra cheese sauce inside, which is a trick I learned. Mm. And that has, you know, lettuce and black beans and jalapenos and all the good stuff and cheese and sour cream and everything. I love that. Like a super stuffed burrito. And then I rip the wrap off like as I eat it because I'm kind of disgusting and I don't like the bread.
So you just sort of suck up the rice and chicken.
He says like a spoon.
Yeah.
You know, there was a guy that I started talking to online very briefly. Didn't kiss him. Nothing happened. And I'm really
he's not a prisoner, is he?
I don't know because his name turned out to be fake. And then I was like,
"It's a good start."
Hang on. Yeah, he emailed me or something, and it was a different name. And I thought, wait a minute. I said, that's not your name. And he got mad at me. He was like, listen, you don't know how many women I've had stalking me. I have to have a fake name. And I was like, oh. But anyway, I got in touch with him because because he'd written this really funny thing about a burrito and about how he went to a burrito stand and they built his burrito wrong instead of doing it so that you got a bite of every ingredient each time. They built it kind of like a tower, and they had like all the cheese in one area and all the salsa in another area.
So it's like, I've just got an iceberg lettuce bite.
Yeah.
So I love, give me black bean. Come on.
Yeah.
I know. So I love burritos so much that I nearly got trapped in like a bad romance. I don't know what was going to happen there.
Well, I mean, burritos have been a path to a lot of your romances as well.
I know, right?
I'm just running theme.
Just maybe stay away from them with this one.
Yeah.
Forget burritos.
Yeah. What about a breakfast burrito? Santa had in LA, and I loved it.
Oh yeah.
An LA breakfast burrito. I mean, all the food in LA is gorgeous.
Yeah, it's good, man. Yeah,
it's great. Strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They know what they're doing. Okay. No, that's a strong one. You know, it's not a sandwich, but it's in fact probably the best version.
It's a LA sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. So now we've got to the best part of the show.
Okay.
Which is the three questions round.
Part.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The narcissistic Nazi, I like to call myself. I don't.
The three questions.
Okay, my first question for you both is, when it comes to your romantic liaisons with men, women, other, whomever, describe for me the ugliest, most Jesus feet that you've ever encountered. And did you stay in the relationship anyway, or did you make her leave your flat entirely?
Oh man, I'm going to give a boring answer because I don't think I've ever seen really bad feet on a woman that comparing to like some of my mates. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So like, as you said, man or woman and a relationship, doesn't have to be sexual. My best friend Kieran has got really, really horrible he won't mind me saying this, hobbit's feet.
Oh no.
But like goblin hobbit with like, no, his is more like longer though, actually, like skeleton-y, yellow. He's a builder though. You know, he uses his feet.
So. Oh yeah, yeah.
Shout out to work. Who doesn't use it? Me, I just sit on my sofa all day watching.
Yours
telly.
Are so soft.
Yeah. My girl always goes, your hands are so soft. You haven't done a day's work in your life.
Yeah, I've never done manual labor in my life. I've never built anything.
Yeah,
I haven't had a girl with bad feet before, but. My stepmom.
Wow.
Yeah, she has hairy feet, first of all, which I've clocked. But also her pinky toe.
Foot pinky.
It hangs off the side of like a flip flop.
It's been severed.
Like, it's like hooks on.
I saw a TikTok instructional video where a woman had strappy black sandals on and the pinky toe was hanging out of the strap, and the girl took a Sharpie and just drew the line for the strap along her pinky so it looked like it was
nice. Yeah, I think she needs that techers ASAP because
might help. My second question for both of you is, what is a lie that you would like to set straight now?
I'm trying to think. I have told a lot of lies.
Biggest liar I know.
Yeah, same. one time when I was young, like 14, I lost a game of Mortal Kombat against my mate Alf. And I was so fuming that I threw the controller through the window and it smashed. And I blamed it on the cat, that I slipped on the cat. And I was holding the remote and I fell and then I punched through the window.
Right.
That was me.
I did say it's similar. I used to have tantrums when I was little and I was like 8 or something. Not that young, I guess. But anyway, my mum, I don't know, said I wasn't allowed something or had a go at me for something. And I kicked the door that was made of glass and I kicked it too hard and it all smashed and I was like, shit. So I quickly went and grabbed my basketball from outdoors and started bouncing it around, and she walked in. I was like, sir, I was playing basketball indoors. So mum, if you're listening, sorry.
Yeah.
See, this is why having boys is dangerous.
It's all to come.
It's true. Yeah.
Okay, my last question is, which parent or adult influence growing up do you think is most responsible for where you are today. That doesn't necessarily mean that they helped you.
Yeah, I know who that is. That's my dad. He is a man of many talents, I would say. He writes songs, does art. Like anything that comes to his head, he will try to do something with it in some sort of creative capacity.
That's sick.
I think being around him when I was a young little sponge, like he would take me to music studios and all sorts of different things, and I feel that he was the kind of maybe where I got it from, if that is a thing, if you get it from someone.
Might have been a hindrance though. Sometimes people with successful parents.
Yeah, no, he's not successful.
Oh. So the perfect balance.
Yeah. He's had his moments, but
I haven't got any. I don't have like a sort of cool creative family. I mean, they're cool, like shout out my family and that.
Yeah, no, my dad's not cool.
Yeah, do you know what I think, like, yeah, mine's not like a direct thing like Hugo's, but probably my mum, just because she was there more, I guess, like, and it's quite a matriarchal household, and she like maybe like overly mothered me, so I wasn't as independent as I could have been, but also I was drilled with that confidence of I should do things basically and not leave things undone and give things a go sort of thing. So it's good. Shout out Mumsy, man.
Yeah. And your dad was a character.
Yeah. My dad was a hustler, man. My dad's like one of those guys that like he just had about 10 different businesses at different times. It was always bankrupt and he would always flip it and do another one. And not anxious at all. Do you know what I mean? Like, and he was like one of them, you know, the Middle Eastern guys that basically dress like Goodfellas, kind of like around coffee shops and suits and that. But yeah, no, shout out my dad, man. But probably my mum, just because she was, more communication with her, you know what I mean?
And are they both Middle Eastern?
Oh, so my mum's Czech and my dad's Kurdish.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing with immigrants too. This is why, like, you know, we're all different. I wouldn't call myself an immigrant. I'm like the kind of immigrant that no one has ever shown any racism towards. I came at a good time. But when my dad was Irish and he was moving around, that was a bad time in Ireland. But like, they're such amazing self-starters and self-restarters.
Oh, 100%. And you know what? Probably subconsciously, that's a massive inspiration to me, because I guess you can never fail if you keep going. You know what I mean? But I never, when I was younger, I never had that mentality. I'd be worried about failing and worried about what people think. But as I get older, I guess I'm a little bit more like him, you know, and the good parts of him. So that's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Yeah. Sick. Amazing. That was a very sweet ending, actually.
Very sweet.
Very therapeutic.
You guys love your dads. It's so cute.
Yeah, man. And the last question, Catherine, which we ask all our guests, is are you our new best friend?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Catherine, thank you so much. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It looks like you're bedding down as well. So
I've been here
for a year.
we will bid you good night.
Yes.
Thank you, guys. It's nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, no, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.
This is the outro. See you later. And good luck. Stay lucky, boy. Stay lucky, boy.
And there you go. That was the amazing Catherine Ryan. How did you feel about that, young baby boy?
Yeah. I felt great. I feel inspired.
Yeah, same. I feel quite relaxed. She's got quite a relaxing energy.
Yeah, it's good.
Do you know what I mean? And those questions are quite wisdom-based. Yeah.
Wise. She's a wise woman of the world.
No, shout out, Catherine. It was a pleasure. And I'm sure you know who she is, but if you want to check out her stuff, go on Netflix. She's got a couple stand-up specials on there.
Yeah.
And The Duchess, which is proper jokes.
Duchess, baby.
Yeah, it's proper sick. So check that out.
Yeah.
And we will see you next time, won't we?
Yeah, on the Chat and Shit podcast.
Exactly. Mate, if that really is your name.
Now fuck off or I call the police.
So,
hey yo, will everyone shut the fuck up?
I want to give a crazy, stupid, dope fly shout out to everyone involved in this podcast.
Nah, fuck that. Who's the brain that produces this show, man?
Man like Rupert Magendi.
And who's the audio editor?
James Torrance, check
it. House. Who's the video editor?
Ha ha, James Lord.
And who does all the illustrations?
It's Alison the Ink.
Mad on the visuals, bruh.
Shout all the posse down at Acast Laboratory. Hip hop, hip hop. Am I right, hustler?
You're not wrong, Playboy Valentino.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.